Hey, friend, welcome back to Proof to Product. Today's conversation is a really good one, especially if craft shows, retail markets, or in-person events are on your radar for this year. Because here's what's happening. The market is shifting. Fees to exhibit are higher, competition to apply and get into shows is stronger, and buyers are showing up differently than they did even a few years ago. But at the same time, I keep seeing how valuable it is to get offline and to connect with our customers face-to-face. That human connection, that's hitting differently right now, and people are craving that in-person connection. But what I love about today's episode is that we are looking at this from both sides of the table. We have Lib. She runs Indie Craft Parade with her team. This is an incredibly well-respected, long-time running show. And Jesse, founder of Root & Branch and one of our Proof to Product community members, who has exhibited at shows like this multiple times. So today in the episode, we're digging into what organizers are actually looking for when you apply for these shows, how exhibitors can decide if a show is worth it, and how to also measure ROI following a show. And then how to think about your strategy so that you're not just showing up for the shows, but you're showing up with true intention. Now, before we dive in, if you are planning to exhibit at retail shows this year, I want to tell you about some resources we have inside of our labs community so that you can do this more strategically. We have checklists and tools and things that will help you bring your booth to life, but also have you thinking about things like inventory, sales goals, and strategies for upping your AOV. So if you want support as you plan for your in-person retail events, you can join us at prooftoproduct.com/labs. Again, that's prooftoproduct.com/labs. All right, let's get into it. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Hey, Lib and Jesse, welcome to the show. I'm really excited to have you both here.
Hi, thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course. Okay, so I will say I'm really excited to have this conversation today because the craft market world has been changing so much over the last several years. And we often do podcasts or interviews or like conversations in our labs community where it's one side or the other, right? It's like the show organizers or it's the people that have exhibited and they're sharing their experiences. And I thought it would just be really cool to have folks from both sides of the table on one podcast episode, meaning Lib, people running events like yourself, and then Jesse, people who are participating in these events and bringing these conversations together. And so I have a bunch of questions, but I really want this conversation to kind of flow on its own and see where we take it, because I personally think there's so much value in that face-to-face connection with our customers. But at the same time, it's weird right now. Things are weird. So we need to kind of talk about it. All right, let's start at the beginning. Lib, why don't you tell the listeners about Indie Craft Parade, the craft show that you and your team run annually?
Sure. Indie Craft Parade takes place in Greenville, South Carolina. We've been doing this since 2010. So we've been around for a little bit.
Yeah.
Long enough to kind of see some like ebbs and flows and trends and things, which will be fun to talk about. We call it a celebration of handmade. And every September, we have over 100 artists and makers participate and show and sell their goods at Indie Craft Parade.
That's amazing. That's a great turnout.
Yeah, we field hundreds of applications for those 100 spots. So it's pretty highly competitive.
Yeah.
Jesse can tell you, we love our makers and it's like heartbreaking if people apply and don't get back in. But I think at this point, people know that it's just really competitive. And there's a few things that we do to try and keep it fresh, which will be, again, fun to talk about. But it's just, we love our makers. We call them ours. They just have to participate one year and you're like, you're ours now.
You're part of our community now. We love you. That flows with my vibe too. All right, Jesse, tell everybody about Root & Branch, your product brand, what you sell. Is your business primarily D2C or wholesale? And then how long you've been doing Indie Craft Parade?
Yeah, I am Jesse. I'm the owner and artist behind Root & Branch Paper Co. I'm an illustrator and I make nature-inspired greeting cards, stationery products, and gifts. And I have been doing Indie Craft Parade for the past 5 years. It is like something that I pencil in on my calendar every year because I love it so much. The first time I did it, it was outdoors due to COVID. And so it was kind of like, everyone was like, this one is different. But I was like, if this is half as good as it normally is, like people are so amazing. It's so fun. And it's just like a wonderful break from doing everything online or alone in my studio. It's so edifying as a maker. That. And I really have enjoyed being a part of it.
That's awesome. So Lib, what type of maker should consider doing a craft show like this? I mean, what are you looking for when you're reviewing applications? As you said, you're getting far more applications than you have space for. So what kind of things should they be prioritizing in their application and what are you looking for?
Great question. So we have some predefined categories, things like fiber art and home goods and food and kitchen. And then we also allow for just a catch-all of everything else. We don't limit. It's really just about the handmade goods. We really don't care how long you've been doing it. If you have any kind of formal training, it's all about the quality. So when our jury is making decisions, they're looking for quality, innovation, uniqueness, and that it fits the spirit and the vision of Indie Craft Parade. So we have a rotating panel of jurors, just new people come every year to jury. And we like to include folks who have been participants at Indie Craft Parade, so they really understand that vision of Indie Craft Parade. Jesse used the word edifying, which I love. It's been really hard to sort of put words to the vibe of Indie Craft Parade. As someone who does all the like design and marketing for the festival, I have tried. And really, until you go, it's just so hard to capture. There's this really beautiful community spirit. I just tell people to watch the video on our website because it's the closest we can get to capturing what it's like. And I think that's just that beautiful maker, artist, community event that's indescribable.
Yeah, for sure. Jesse, how do you evaluate which shows to do? There's so many popping up nowadays. How do you decide what's worth applying to as an exhibitor?
That is a great question. That's something I'm always trying to figure out the answer to. And it totally depends on the season. But something I always love is recognizing like a show that is curated well and thoughtfully organized from both the perspective of the vendor. What are the other brands that are doing it? What are the kinds of products that are being sold? But also the customer experience is really important. I want to be able to invite my audience to something I know they're going to love and they're going to have a great time. And I also love going to these kind of events, even if I'm not a vendor. I think it's even better to go and not be a vendor because you don't have to be stressed out. You just get to buy stuff and celebrate handmade things. So that's like, I don't do a lot of shows. I'm primarily focused on wholesale. So I definitely don't do a lot of D2C markets. But the ones that I do that I like make space for in my calendar are always just a highlight of the year. They're just so fun. And I think, Lib, when you're describing like the atmosphere, I always tell people it feels like a party at Indie Craft Parade. It always feels just like so fun, just a celebration. And it reminds me why I do things, which is such a good reminder, especially when you're doing wholesale. It's a lot more business focused, a lot more strategic. And this one is just fun. Like it really is just the joy of making things, meeting with people who love handmade things. And that's just, it's so fun.
Yeah.
I'll say this too, real quick. We know from overhearing that artists talk about shows amongst themselves. And there's a lot of recommendations that are passed around. So we actually put those together. We just put up a blog post on indiecraftparade.com in our news section. And it's basically a roundup of all the shows that we hear our artists talking about. We pulled together websites and application deadlines and just sort of like, these are the ones that our artists consistently have good things to say about, because there is a circuit. There is like an understanding of which ones are worth it. Because doing a show is hard work. There's a lot of schlepping. There's a lot of lifting and setting up and being really on. So you don't want to waste your time. And so I think one of the best resources for finding good shows is talking to the other makers. I definitely have heard some discussions and seen, overheard them in labs. And I think that's just such a great resource for people to say, all right, what do you know about this? Who's participated? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Like, what do we need to know?
Yeah. I appreciate you bringing up the work involved in these shows, Lib, because I was going there with Jesse in a minute, but these shows are super fun. You get to be around people who are doing similar things to you that you're creating. You get to be around customers who appreciate the work that you're putting into it. And the specialness that comes from each of mm-hmm. the things everyone's making, right? But also, there is a lot of work. There's a lot of schlepping. There's a lot of deciding how much inventory to bring. There's doing the sales and marketing pre-show as well as during the show. There's a lot of logistics to it. So, Jesse, how are you preparing for these shows? Like, how far out are you starting? And I know the inventory piece is a big sticking point. A lot of people struggle with how much inventory do I bring to a cash and carry show like this where I'm going to sell through stuff. And Jesse, you travel to this show, so you have to bring everything with you.
Mm-hmm, I do.
If you're going to do it. So can you talk a little bit about how you navigate that?
Yes. I feel fortunate that I'm not hand making every product. That makes shows a lot easier for me because I send everything off to my manufacturers and then I get it. So I have a lot of things on the shelf ready to be pulled. So that makes it quite easy for me as opposed to people who are hand pouring every candle or whatever they're making. However, the first time I did IndieCraft, I sold out of everything and I was like, oh no, you know, people are coming to my booth and I have 3 cards left.
That's like the worst nightmare, but at the same time, like, it's a good sign that your stuff sells.
Yeah, I was blown away. I've never had that happen before because I usually way over prepare, but I wasn't ready for how much people were just ready to buy things. So now, that was 5-6 years ago. Now I'm always bringing way too much stuff, which I would rather have my booth fully packed at the end of the last day so that the last customer who comes in has the same experience as the first day. But my limits are always, I have a very small car and I'm usually driving, so I have to fit everything in. And I have built a like Tetris situation in the back of my car that I honestly think is one of my best creative expressions of my business. I'm like, this is really amazing that I've done this. And every vendor has the same, our strategy of how we move all the stuff from point A to point B, set it up, and still have the energy to talk to people for 2 or 3 days straight. It really is just like, there's so many moving parts and it's exhausting. And at the end, you're like emotionally depleted, but so happy, but like, it is a lot of work. And I totally agree with the statement, like you have to choose the right ones. You want to choose ones that are not only a great show, but like the right show for you. So that's been a good learning experience for me.
I want to elaborate on what you're saying about choosing the right show for you. Listeners hear that when I talk about trade shows and they're like, yeah, but which one is right for me? They struggle with what does that mean? And listeners, what we mean by that is your audience is attending that show. Your types of customers are attending that show. You're around other creators and other sellers who are selling similar, but hopefully not super competing products with your own. Basically, if you are selling plant trellises and things like that, you're not going to go to maybe a kid and baby show or something. Like, trying to find alignment with where your audience is showing up and what you sell is kind of how we decide what's the best fit for you. And we can get creative and look outside into other segments and stuff, but I think that alignment with just the core customer is really important. Lib, do you want to talk about that a little bit more?
I do. I think this is such a good point. So because we have 400 or 500 applications plus come in for these 100 spots, we legitimately have really talented artists who don't make it into the show. And I think when you're trying to decide which shows are right for you, you really have to trust the show organizers. We know this show inside and out. We know what products do well. And if you don't get into a show, it doesn't necessarily mean that your work isn't good. It just might mean it's not the best fit or there's too much competition. So one of the things that I think IndieCraft Parade does really well is we distribute our makers across a variety of mediums. We are not going to show up to IndieCraft Parade and have 50% of the artists be jewelry makers. That's not good for anyone. Right. And so same thing goes for candle makers and cards. And there are limits to these categories. And that's a big part of our curation. Not only are we not overinflating and overfilling a particular category, we are also putting similar vendors. We are very strategically placing them in different spaces throughout the event. So we always get a lot of, why didn't my work make it in? And a lot of times the answer is that is a very, very competitive category. Please try again next year. It's just because you don't make it into a show 1 year doesn't mean that's going to be the case every year, especially with our show, because we have a different group of jury members every year. Everybody's got slightly different tastes and preferences. But I also think there's just something really important to understand about the curation aspect is the show organizers understand that market better than anyone else. So you kind of got to trust the process a little bit. And if you've ever found yourself in a show that's not full of your people, it's a miserable experience.
Yeah.
You don't want to be there. I think one thing that's really interesting is I am an organizer of a show, but I also run a small business. I run a publishing company. And like this podcast is coming at a very interesting time. When we're done chatting, I'm literally hopping in my car because I have a show this weekend. And it's just a very fun thing to be on the other side of the show and experience it as a vendor. And even just in the lead up to this show that I'm taking part in, I'm learning and like taking notes about how they're making their show good or where the pain points are. We're always improving. And so I think that's like a really big benefit is I'm seeing both sides. And I love the idea of this podcast and having Jesse on so we could talk about like, okay, I know what it's like on the coordination and organization side of Indie Craft Parade. How does it feel to be a vendor on the outside? And just there's, I don't know, there's a lot of value in experiencing both sides.
1,000%. I also think there's a lot of value in just having these kind of conversations, right?
Yeah.
And I know you're doing those privately behind the scenes, Lib, too, with all the people exhibiting and applying. But I think it's nice to have this in public, too, so that other people can be in on the conversation and contribute in meaningful ways when we air this in our community, in public, whatever it might be. Lib, I have to say that the care and intention in which you and the team at Indie Craft Parade put into your application process, your selection process, your curation of which brands are coming in, but also like where they're being situated on the floor. I don't know, but I have to imagine that that's pretty unique. I feel like a lot of people organizing, and there's obviously different levels of this, right? Like there's the major corporations that are just trying to put butts in seats, and then there's the people that are smaller and more organic trying to make sure the right people are there. But like, to me, what you're talking about seems like a very unique selling proposition to brands. I don't see a lot of organizers who are putting that much thought and care into their selection process. And I think, too, when folks apply for something and they're told, no, this isn't the right fit for you, they take that very personally. They think something's wrong with their product, something's wrong with their brand, I'm not good enough. Unfortunately, a lot of people internalize that kind of stuff. And what you're saying here, I just want to reiterate for the listeners, is no, you know your audience. You know the customers that are shopping at your show. You know the other brands that are there. You want it to be the best experience for anyone that's attending, regardless of what position they're coming, whether they're a seller or a buyer. And I just want to give you kudos for that because I think that makes Indie Craft Parade very unique and also just a great thing to be a part of.
Yeah, I think it definitely makes the artists who are part of it feel like extra special. But I do think that we began back in 2010 with the question of if we were participating in the show, what would we want? And that's been our driving factor. We maker bags that we give to our artists. Like some shows do these little goodie bags for like the first 250 shoppers or whatever. And we always focus on the artists. And it's really fun to come up with what might an artist need. So like we put stuff like ibuprofen and water bottles and hand sanitizer and mints and like all of the, what is it that you might have forgotten? What is it that you might need on hand during setup day? This is one of my favorite things. We have a tools of the trade table and it's like actual literal tools, drills, you know, zip ties,
amazing,
double stick tape, masking. Like really, if we can keep you from having to run to the closest hardware store, then we've done our job. But I think that stems from being makers ourselves and just kind of asking that golden rule, what would we want out of an event?
Yeah. I love that you mentioned the little gift bags with the Tylenol and the mints and things like that. When I was exhibiting at the National Stationery Show many moons ago and I started to run Trade Show Bootcamp, which is now Proof to Product, and we started to have like a large contingency of our community members exhibiting at those shows, we gave out little emergency kits like that too. Aww. Where it was Tylenol and chapstick and mints and like, I don't know, just some little, it wasn't the toolkit like you're talking about, but it was,
it's those little things that make a difference because we would not have the beautiful show that we have without our artists. And so our job is to take care of the artists because when you're setting up for a show, when you've got people about to walk in the doors, this can be like a really highly stressful experience before they even get to our show. There may have been travel issues, a flat tire, like who knows? And so we want our artists to leave the show being like, that was exhausting and I had a good experience.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, I love that. All right, Jesse, let's talk about marketing and sales strategies that you've utilized at Indie Craft Parade or other shows to kind of boost sales. I know when you and I worked in advisory board together and stuff, you were working on some bundling options and some other creative ways to heighten your average order value at the show. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I usually travel for shows, which is interesting for me in terms of marketing because I'm like, I don't really know who of my audience is even in this city. And in like Greenville, for example, because I've been going for 5 years, I do have quite an audience in Greenville. Greenville people are so supportive of me, and often I will see the same people over again on the show, which is great. But because of that, I've just sort of assumed now if I travel for a show, like my people are there. So I always invite my audience on social media, my email list, and I say, like, come out to Greenville for this show. And if you're not there, no worries, I'll give you free shipping on an online order. So I kind of help spread the marketing in a way that doesn't give people FOMO.
Yeah.
Because you can't, even if you're in town, you can't always make it. And that's been kind of an easy way for me to be like, include my entire audience in the show, but also be able to share the story of my weekend, what I'm doing.
Yeah.
In a way that kind of ties into, okay, like I'm also selling these things. And that's been really fun. I always get a really good response. And then I kind of just think of, okay, the weekend sales included those online sales because it's all together, all the same thing.
Well, and Jesse, you do a really great job on social media of like bringing your audience into your day-to-day life. And when you're doing special events like that, I think you do an even more extraordinary job of like, this is what it's like. You know, you're real, you're honest, but you are also at the same time saying, hey, here's my stuff, come buy it. You know, whether it's, that's a compliment. No, it's a compliment.
Thank you.
And inviting them in a way, as you said, if you're in town, come see me in person. If you're not, shop online and we've got some specials for you. And I think that really resonates with people because it's your true authentic self.
What's funny is I think the last year at IndieCraft, it always happens where I just totally run out of social energy at one point in the day. And I'm like, I need to be in a quiet space for like 5 minutes.
Introvert, yes.
And one year I just went under my table and thankfully Ben, my husband, was there. I was like, you've got the cash register. I'm going to sit under the table. No one speak to me for just 5 minutes.
I need a timeout. Yeah.
And then I filmed myself like hiding and I made a reel about it, just like totally as a joke, posted it. You know, when I run out of social energy, like this is what happens at a show. And of course, like that one got so much like views on it. And nothing about my product, nothing about my business.
It's relatable. That's why it got so much traction.
People respond to. Yeah. That is really how it is. And it's, like you were saying, Liv, it's so valuable to have show organizers who understand that. Like, you guys definitely have been there, been in our situation as vendors. And that is so felt by, at least for me as a vendor. It makes a huge difference.
Absolutely.
Well, I know that happens at other shows, but Indie Craft Parade is pretty intense. It's one of the few three-day markets left kind of in the Southeast. And also, it's really well attended. So it can get a little intense. We specifically have a artist lounge that's like quiet and away with snacks and like just sit, breathe, and then you can go back out. Like we have like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and like just,
it's comforting.
Go breathe, and then you can like get a little bit of energy to get back at it. Because I'm the same way. I am an introvert, and it's like I'm an introvert all year except for this one weekend.
Yes,
because that's what's required.
Yeah.
And so I just know it's exhausting. I feel it. We all feel it. And not everyone has the luxury of like taking the next day off. So many makers have day jobs, and it's like when I get home, I got to hit the ground running. And here we go back to all the normal routines and childcare and work and school. And that's just the reality of where a lot of us are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I like to build a day in after paper camp finishes or like any big – or if I go to trade shows. But you're right, Lib. Like I wasn't always able to do that. And even so, I'm still coming home and still having real life that's happening around me. I maybe feel like a zombie, but I'm making it all work. Okay, Jesse, great recap on like the marketing side of things. Let's talk about while you're at the show, standing there selling your goods, what kind of things are you doing to kind of like heighten the sales? I mean, it sounds like there's plenty of buyers, there's lots of people shopping, but like, are you running any specials? Are you doing anything to kind of boost that sales conversion?
Yes, I usually do. Oftentimes shows, especially a bigger one, people pay a small entry fee to be there. And also they've taken the time out of their day to go. So I kind of want to give them a little bit of extra feel of, ooh, I got something special, as opposed to buying online. So I usually do like a buy this many cards, get one free, like buy this many stickers, something like that, some kind of boost. And that makes people, especially the buyers who are stocking up on cards or, you know, buying a set or buying a bunch of Christmas cards or something, like those people really take advantage of the sale, which is awesome for me from a sales standpoint. It also helps like boost my average order value a little bit. Just encouraging people like, hey, if you like three of these things, just get them all and you'll get a free one. You know, like it's an easy way to just sort of sell more of my product. That's usually what I do. I don't typically like prepackage anything just because it takes more time in advance. That way I don't have, obviously. So anything that I can just apply to my product as is. And like Katie always says, a discount, you know, devalues the product a little bit. So like selling up, adding like extra gifts, extra free things is usually what I try to do.
Yeah, I love giving more product and upping the AOV rather than discounting and kind of squashing things a little bit. Speaking of the like gift bags and things like that, or not gift bags, mystery bags. We see a lot of people talking about putting together mystery bags to sell at these shows that are kind of a mix of like newer products, but also some discontinued or things they're trying to offload. And I think that can be a good strategy. But Jesse, I really appreciate you mentioning that that does take pre-work, right? That takes, we have to be thoughtful in how we're doing them and how we're marketing them. And, you know, people don't always understand the mystery bags too. And you have to kind of.
I always want to do that, but I always run out of time. I've never actually implemented it. And it's one of those things I just, you got to let some stuff go before a show.
Yes. And what do I always say? Nobody knows what did not get done that you had on the to-do list or you had planned. So let it roll. Lib, you know, we have seen a shift in the retail market world lately. We're seeing new regional and like specialty shows popping up. We're also hearing from a lot of our folks in our community that exhibiting prices are increasing. I feel like everything that we purchase these days is increasing. I know from all the product maker side of things, their product costs are going up. Obviously, you cannot speak for all shows, but can you shed some light as to what exhibiting fees typically cover and why some shows may need to raise their exhibiting fees?
I'll tell you that venue costs have skyrocketed, just increased. I'm saying that as someone, we've done this 17 years. Of course, in 17 years, our budget looks very different. But the reality is all of our costs are going up on our side too. I think when you're trying to evaluate a show, one of the great things to look at is how much does that show put into promoting the event? We have been to shows before, traveled out of town to shows to see what this is like. And no one in the community knows it's happening. There's no billboards. There's no awareness. And for me, that's such a huge flag, like a huge red flag. All of these vendors are paying to be part of this event. And to me, one of the core jobs of the organizer is to make sure that we get people there. Of course, we want help from all of our artists and we help provide them with materials to do that. But it is our job to get people there. And so when you think about that, you know, all of the costs for things like we do postcards and billboards and radio ads, and in addition to the venue and the signage and the event maps, like all of those costs clearly add up. Our goal is to not pass those all on to our artists. We are a sponsored event. We try to subsidize those costs with the help of community sponsors because we have made it a point to take care of our artists. that also bleeds over into the sponsors that we work with. And so sponsors who really care a lot about artists and makers and want to make connections with them are the ones that we ideally love to work with. I'll just throw a little plug out there. We are looking for sponsors for this year's event. Anyone who really wants to get connected to this incredible maker community, we're happy to help make those connections. I think that's just a really, costs are a real, just their reality. And so it's hard, but we try to make sure that our exhibition costs and our fees are in line with the market and that we're not, you know, but this is why it's good to be aware of the other shows on the market as well. We're competing with them for our artists and makers, and hopefully all of our artists are able to look at all the shows and say, okay, these are all comparable and these are the ones I want to try and get into.
Yeah. What you're saying makes complete sense. I think it's helpful for everyone to hear too. You know, Jesse, we know that brands are constantly evaluating the ROI for these shows, and that's factoring into their decision of whether or not to participate initially, but also whether to go back and continue applying, right? So How do you define success for your business with these shows? Is it purely revenue-based, or are there other metrics that you're tracking?
There are a lot of metrics. For me, I love when I'm able to give out my wholesale information. As a mostly wholesale business, I always bring several catalogs and postcards, and I love when I get to talk to shop owners. That's often the case at a larger show. Like, shop owners will come and look for new products to carry at their stores. Or if it's a show like Indie, where I've done it a few years, I get to see shop owners who are carrying my product and talk to them, get some feedback, which is so valuable. You can't put a number on how valuable it is to talk to your customer in person versus on the internet. There's just no comparison. So that's something that, like, you can't say, you know, this was worth this many dollars, but being able to hear customer feedback, I always have a huge long list of ideas, things that customers ask me to make, new product categories, new, like, hey, could you put this moth on this thing? You know, like,
yep.
And I'm like, oh, I didn't think about that. But if 10 people are going to ask me to do it, I'm going to do it. So it really helps me hone my product line. Just stuff like this. It obviously, the sales are important. I'm not going to do a show that I lost money on. I'm not going to do a show that didn't cover, you know, my hotel and my cost of travel and all that. And it also needs to make, like, my time worth it. It really, like we talked about, it takes a lot out of you. You know, I'm not really able to jump in and keep running the business at the same capacity when I get back. It is exhausting. So the finances need to make sense. But I think about it in a lot of different ways. Just like, how do I feel in terms of the vision of my business after doing one of these is really interesting. If I feel like I've been to some shows and I'm like, you know, this city isn't really the city for me. Urban areas are not as big of a sell for me because I'm doing a lot of nature-inspired stuff. If I can be in, like, a smaller city where people are really connected to the natural world, where people are going to geek out about the type of beetle that I drew, that's going to give me so much more excitement about, like, getting back in, making more of my product.
Yeah.
So those are things I also value in a show.
Jesse, I love how you talk about both the quantitative and the non-quantitative things. I'm getting real technical here, but, like, we do need to look at the numbers and we need to look at the data and we need to see what sells. But also there's, like, a bucket filling aspect of doing these shows, of being around people that appreciate your work, being around people that are doing similar types of creative work and hearing what they're doing, generating ideas for new things. It's validating in that respect too. And that's not to be excluded when you're weighing the ROI of whether a show is a good show.
So valuable. And especially as an artist who is, you know, operating in a business space, being able to maintain the creative inspiration is something that is so important and so valuable to me. Because if I run out of that, I don't have a business anymore. Like, that really is something I need to feed. So being able to do events where I consistently know that I'm going to feel encouraged and inspired and, you know, excited to keep making things is a huge deal to me.
Yeah, love that. All right, Lib, why do you believe in-person events matter more now than ever before?
Last year at the event, I just had this sort of realization. There's always this beautiful spirit of Indie Craft Parade that's this indefinable thing I was talking about earlier. But last year, I think, was the closest I've been able to get a point on why it feels so special. I think there's this real small town feel to it, even though Greenville's a city, but it's the connection. It's the face-to-face, in-person connection. And last year in particular, it was in such high contrast to the world that I was seeing online on my phone. It was like two different experiences. Like when I look at my phone and Instagram, there's this one kind of world and a lot of hurt and outrage. And then I put my phone down and I look up and there's beautiful people making amazing things. And that is why I have such a hard time putting words to it, but it's just so beautiful. And I think the contrast and the reality that we all get, like this reminder of, oh, this is the real world. These are the people in it. Mm-hmm. We're here all because we like creativity and making and being inspired. That, I think, is so powerful and so impossible to capture and bottle. And that's why I think it's so important.
Yeah. Oh, Lib, that is such an important distinction. I mean, aside from the sales opportunities and the marketing opportunities, like it's that human to human connection. It's reminding us of who we are on this planet and why it's important that we're connecting and, you know, seeing each other for who we are in real life. Thank you for sharing that. That was really touching.
We made a festival shirt last year that said, "Buy art from humans." And it was beautifully designed. And I didn't even get one. They sold out. It was like, I just think people want that humanity. And you'll definitely see that shirt again this fall because it's such an important message. And when you're online, you know, the artist community is yelling it from the rooftops, but to actually experience it and realize how important it is just very different.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Jesse, if someone listening has never done a show before and they're considering taking that leap, whether it's indie or elsewhere, what's the one thing you want them to kind of take away from this episode from the creator-seller side?
I would say start small. Just see it as an opportunity to share your brand. Every person that you speak to, every, you know, opportunity to share about an event that you did on your social media or on your email list is building your brand, is building your company. And the first shows that I did were like really tiny, just a few hours on the side of a street downtown or something. And I learned so much. And honestly, I probably learned the same amount from those shows at that period of my business as I do now from doing a 3-day indie craft parade. You can just take so much if you're willing to hear what people have to say. Sometimes it's criticism and you can let that go if you want, but
please do, yes.
These are such good opportunities to just imagine what your business could be, to strategize. Yeah. And they're also fun. Like you were saying, there's something really special about being able to have fun, being able to connect with people and be in the real world through business. I think it's a real gift.
I love that. All right, Lib, where can people learn more about IndieCraft Parade? And if they're interested in applying for the upcoming show, where can they do that?
IndieCraftParade.com. If you go to our website, you can watch the video from last year, get a feeling for what the event is like. Applications for the 2026 festival will be open April 1st through 20th. We encourage all artists and makers to apply. You never know what will happen. If you don't feel like you're ready for that, one thing I'll say that's a very nice entry point is you can always volunteer for the show. You can get an idea of what it's like behind the scenes. You assist artists and makers and kind of can picture yourself in that setting and be like, okay, is this something that I want to do? Am I ready for this or not? So IndieCraftParade.com. Our festival is September 11th through 13th this year. And we'd love to see lots of artists apply.
I love that you have that volunteer option. When we're talking about wholesale trade shows, we always tell folks, like, go walk the show first so you can get a sense of what it is. And, you know, people in our community oftentimes need helpers or have extra badges. So, like, team up with somebody to see it. And I appreciate that you're having that opportunity for folks. And most people want to contribute, too, in some way to be able to see it. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And Jesse will tell you those volunteers are the best. They'll bring water around and bring food around. And they are literally the best.
That's true.
Awesome. Okay, Jesse, where can they buy your stuff and where can they follow you online?
My website is rootandbranchpaper.com, and I'm on Instagram at rootandbranchpaper.
You can find Jesse hiding under tables and also talking about all the ups and downs. I know, Jesse, I'm teasing right now. I love you and I love your socials because you just keep it real. And the reason it's relatable, and that's why people really enjoy, whether it's your customers or colleagues in the industry, they love following you there because
you're
relatable. Ladies, this was a joy to chat with you. Thank you for all the hard work you're doing on the brand side, on the organizer side of these shows. Thank you for being here to share your experiences and have this conversation.
This was so fun. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Katie.
Of course. This was such a great conversation and a really honest look at what it takes to make these retail in-person events work right now. I loved hearing about how Lib and her team are pouring into the artists that exhibit at their show. And then I loved hearing what Jessie's doing before, during, and after her shows to make sure they're successful. Listen, the opportunities are there. Being face-to-face with your customers, building real relationships, that matters more than ever, and that's going to really help you sell more of your products. But I will say, too, the brands that are doing these shows and doing them well, they aren't winging it. They're planning ahead. They're thinking ahead about their inventory, their booth setup, their marketing and sales strategies, so that they're actually converting more of that in-person connection and conversation into revenue. Listen, if you're thinking about doing a show this year and you're focusing on how to do that show, if you need a little support in that area, we can help you inside of our Labs program. We've built resources to help you prepare, from checklists to inventory planning to sales strategies. And we have all of that available on demand at prooftoproduct.com/labs. Again, that's prooftoproduct.com/labs. Also, if this episode was helpful for you, please share it with a friend who's considering doing retail markets this year. I think they'll find it helpful to hear both sides of the coin in this situation. All right, thanks for sticking with me till the end. I'll be back soon with another new episode.